Hi, this is Dr. Cassandra Quave, and you're listening to the Foodie Pharmacology Podcast. This is not your typical food podcast. As a professor and medical ethnobotanist that studies wild medicinal and food plants for a living, I have so many cool things to share with you. In Foodie Pharmacology, we're going to explore the ways that humans identify, collect, create, and transform foods, and how they shape those into dietary behaviors, and how this influences human health. We'll examine the pharmacological or medicinal properties of foods as we discuss different species that have been integrated into various cuisines across the globe. This will help us to better understand the food-medicine continuum as a determinant of human health and well-being. Foodie Pharmacology is a food podcast built for the food curious, the flavor connoisseurs, chefs, science geeks, foodies, home cooks, health nuts, and adventurous taste testers out there in the world. So join me. In our third episode, we're going to take a closer look at the third largest source of food carbohydrates in the tropics after rice and corn. This is a plant that feeds over 500 million people. But what if I were to tell you that it also contains compounds that can cause cyanide poisoning? Let's dig in to learn more about how a poisonous plant has become so integral to the food system of so many. This plant is most popular in the tropics from South America to Africa and Oceania, where it is commonly cultivated and used as a foundational starch basis to many cuisines. The tubers, or the roots, are the part most commonly harvested and processed for food. As an additional bonus for any in the audience that have a gluten intolerance, you'll be pleased to know that this starch source is naturally gluten-free. You may have consumed it as an ingredient in tapioca pudding, personally a favorite treat of my childhood, or even in the trendy bubble tea. This is the ingredient that makes those delightfully chewy bubbles in the drink. It is also the ingredient used to make gari, a fermented, cooked, and dehydrated starchy meal that is widely consumed in West Africa. The plant goes by many names, including cassava, manioc, yucca, balangoy, mogo, mandioca, camotin cowhow, and tapioca. And I apologize if I butchered those names. But are you intrigued? Let's take a look and dig in and learn more. Cassava is more than just a food. It also plays a big role in traditional medicine and is used to treat hypertension, fever, irritable bowel, headaches, and other pains. Cassareep, a special cassava syrup, has been found to have antiseptic properties and is also used in traditional medicine for eye diseases. Cassareep syrup is made by taking the juice of the bitter cassava roots, mixing it with other spices like cayenne pepper, cloves, and cinnamon, and boiling it down to form a thick black syrup. The scientific name of cassava is Manihot esculenta, and it is a member of the Euphorbiaceae family, a plant family that is best known for its white and colored latex and resins that are rich in poisonous compounds. Cassava is native to South America, where it continues to be cultivated by local people for use as a major food ingredient, often eaten with fish, meat, or green vegetables that are cultivated or wild foraged. Cassava was domesticated in Brazil over 10,000 years ago and was a staple food for the pre-Columbian Americans. Portuguese colonists introduced this plant to Africa in the 16th century, and now Africa accounts for more than half of the world's total cassava production. Even though cassava comes from rainy tropical areas, it also has the added advantage of being very drought tolerant, making it ideal for growing in areas at risk of drought due to climate change. The harvesting of cassava is primarily done by hand, though the use of mechanical harvesting techniques has started to expand in Brazil and Southeast Asia. Usually, though, it is grown in small garden or farm plots on sloped hills that are not amenable to machine harvesting of the roots. And since it is a woody perennial, there is no fixed time of optimal maturity, and there is some flexibility to the harvest time. This means that you get an extra boost to food security and food access wherever it is grown. The time to use this plant post-harvest, however, is rather short. The roots become inedible within a few days of harvest due to deterioration of the root by production of phenolic compounds that polymerize to discolor the root tissue with brown, black, and blue pigments. However, packing methods have been developed for use in commercial production that ensures root quality is maintained for a few weeks, enabling their shipment and sale to distant commercial markets. One of the most common methods for preparing cassava is to peel the fresh root and boil it for 15 to 30 minutes alone or with other ingredients in a soup. The raw or boiled pieces can also be fried to make thick cassava fries. While the most commonly used part of cassava is the tuber, the leaves make up an important part of the diet in several African countries, where they are chopped up and boiled prior to eating them. The transformation of cassava tuber into its many forms is absolutely fascinating to me. Let's start with the example of gari, which contributes up to 60% of the total caloric intake in West Africa. Gari is prepared over a series of labor-intensive steps that yield a final, shelf-stable food that can be stored and used as needed in meal preparation. This is how it works. First, the roots are harvested and hand-peeled. Then they're grated into a pulp over a big perforated metal sheet. Imagine working with a super-sized cheese grater over a big bucket. Then, the water pulp is placed into cloth sacks, and something heavy is put on top of them to gradually squeeze out the water over a period of several days. 70% of the weight of cassava is due to its water content, so this water removal process is super important to making the final product more portable and long-lasting. This is also when the natural fermentation step occurs with the lactic acid bacteria that are naturally found on the plant. And this part is crucial to imparting the sour taste of the final product that is so desired in this cuisine. So at the end of this process, you have a pressed cake of dried cassava pulp. This pulp has to be broken apart by hand and rubbed through a sieve that is made out of woven palm tree leaves to remove any big chunks of fiber. Next, this sieved mash is toasted in a clay or iron pot over a fire with constant stirring until the starch reaches a gelatin-like texture and the moisture content is reduced. Sometimes, palm oil is also added during this heating process to help prevent sticking or burning, and it gives the product more of a yellow rather than a white final color. I don't know about you, but I'm getting hungry. I want to try to make this stuff. Have you ever tasted fufu? This is another cassava product that is popular in Africa. In this case, the root is boiled and pounded into a dough that is often mixed with yam and plantains. Fufu can also be made with cassava flour, and it's usually eaten with a soup. In Brazil, where cassava was originally domesticated, they make farinha de mandioca. This is grated and dried cassava root that is used as a condiment or a side dish. They remove the toxic cyanogenic glycosides found in the root by first soaking the roots in water and then grating and squeezing out the liquid and drying it for storage. This cassava powder is also used to make Brazilian tapioca, which is served as a dessert topped with shredded coconut, chocolate, or delicious fruit marmalades. In Asia, tapioca pearls are made to a size of 2 to 8 millimeters and used in desserts or in bubble tea. It was the summer of 1999 when I first encountered cassava as a regular part of my daily meal at the research lodge I was staying at in the Peruvian Amazon. Most days, the lodge cook prepared it as large cubes that were softened by boiling and resembled chunks of a starchy potato floating in a soup. other times, we get it in rectangular form, deep fried and resembling a thick cut steak fry. And then one day, while I was visiting families in a nearby village, I encountered the most interesting preparation of cassava yet. It was called masato. This was unlike any form of the vegetable I'd eaten yet. It was fermenting in a large barrel situated on the open platform of the raised height, palm-thatched hut where the family lived. It was a tremendous sign of honor and a gesture of hospitality to be offered some of this homemade brew. It was prepared in an interesting way. After boiling the tuber, it is chewed, sometimes with a swish of sugarcane juice in the mouth, and then the mix of the cooked tuber, saliva, and sugarcane juice is spit into the large barrel. The amylase in our saliva starts the process of breaking down the starches into sugars that in turn feed the natural yeast from the environment, kick-starting an alcoholic fermentation process and resulting in the production of carbon dioxide and ethanol by the microbes. The result is a mildly alcoholic slurry of starchy manioc and spit. Check out my photos online. I've posted them on Facebook. I was offered a serving in a bowl made of a dried gourd that had been split in two. The taste wasn't bad, but I'll be honest, it was hard to get over the gut reaction of its preparation method. For locals, though, it is regarded as a delightful jungle beer and an important part of their cultural heritage. We know that cassava is a rich source of carbohydrates, but what about its other nutritional qualities? The bad news is that it is a poor source of plant proteins and fats, but it is a good source of calcium and vitamin C. It also contains important minerals like zinc, iron, magnesium, copper, and manganese. The cassava plant contains two major compounds responsible for its poisonous properties, linamarin and lotostrelin. Both of these are cyanogenic glycosides, meaning that there is a sugar unit of the compound attached to a hydrogen cyanide-bearing unit. When the sugar is cleaved off, the toxic cyanide element is released. The fresh roots and leaves contain levels of these compounds that can be toxic and even deadly. But when properly treated through processing methods like grating, fermenting, roasting, or boiling the tuber, the toxicity becomes negligible. By grating the tuber, the enzyme linamarase comes into contact with the linamarin, facilitating its breakdown. The fermentation process also reduces toxicity and increases the acidic pH of the product. The remaining cyanides are detoxified through the water draining and heating processes that follow. However, if processed improperly and eaten, especially for bitter varieties of cassava, which contain higher levels of these poisonous elements, this can cause acute cyanide intoxication, goiters, and a neurologic disorder known as Kanzo, which can affect the ability to walk. Cyanogenic glycosides are considered anti-nutrients, or compounds found in edible crops that interfere with nutrient absorption in the body. At this point, you may be asking yourself, why on earth would anyone grow the bitter variety that contains more poison than the sweet variety? Note that the sweet variety doesn't actually even taste sweet. It is simply called sweet due to lower levels of the bitter poisonous compounds. The reason for this cultivation of the bitter variety is so simple and yet elegant. It all comes down to crop security. The bitter variety, which again, you're not going to find in your typical grocery stores or in international markets, is selected and grown by local people because it is pest resistant. There's a balance that has to be achieved here. If you only grow the sweet variety, you are gambling on the risk of losing all of your crop, leading to famine and no way to feed your family. This is because those bitter poisons that we need to avoid are actually pretty useful to the plant in defending itself from disease, like a natural pesticide. So if you include the bitter variety in your crop, it may take a little extra work, but you're a guaranteed dinner at the end of the day. You can find cassava these days in most grocery stores or international markets. The long brown tuber can be easily recognized on the produce aisle. You will only find the sweet variety, the one that's lowest in cyanogenic glycosides, in commerce. So you don't need to worry about the extensive processing techniques that are required in the traditional preparation of the bitter variety. And no matter how you take it, whether it's a plate of yucca fries, boiled in a soup, as a tapioca dessert, or in bubble tea, I hope that the next time you encounter this fascinating food plant, that you reflect on its importance as a core resource responsible for feeding hundreds of millions of people every single day. Join me next time as we explore the incredible chemistry and history of miracle fruit. I'm Dr. Cassandra Quave, and you've been listening to Foodie Pharmacology, the food podcast for the food curious, recorded at the Emory University Center for Digital Scholarship. Get updates on our latest episodes by following or liking the Foodie Pharmacology Facebook page. If you've got a great idea for a future show, reach out to me. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Quave Ethnobot, spelled Q-U-A-V-E-E-T-H-N-O-B-O-T. I'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.